Hi, I'm your host Keshav Chauhan, and this is Milliseconds, an attempt at personifying all of the things we see but don't think about. Well, this episode is close to my heart. It's very special. It's the episode where I talk to my favorite podcaster, Doug Shapiro, the Vice President of Research and Insights at OFS and the host of the Imagine a Place podcast. A podcast about people, places, and design that will most certainly help you grow. Whether it's a workplace, a home, or all the places in between, interior design is shaping the human experience every day and is evolving in fascinating ways. This episode follows a similar tangent where we go on a ride and dig deeper into Doug's brain, the way he sees the world, his thoughts on places, and what it does to us, and all the things that we see but don't think about.
All right. Well, I love being the one that asks questions, so I'm honored to ask you a question as a podcast host.
Yeah.
So tell me, you like to explore the things we don't see. You mentioned that in your podcast trailer.
Yeah.
What is it about things we don't see that you're attracted to?
For example, let's take the example of Instagram, an app that many people use these days. And what people don't realize is that because of the colors Instagram uses, because of the time it takes to load Instagram when you click it, and all the things that people don't think about, don't see, that's what gets them hooked to the app. That's what makes them use the app over and over again. And that's why I'm really excited about things that we don't see and that people don't think about, to explore those things. And also humanizing technology on the same lines, how can we use products to assist us and not distract us. That's what people don't realize, that things we don't see and don't think about are influencing us so much that we don't know. So that's what got me into podcasting and this tagline of things we don't see. So yeah,
that's really cool. And milliseconds?
So there's this term known as Doherty threshold, and the term is, I think the Doherty threshold is known as 400 milliseconds. So it's the maximum amount of time an app should take to load, because the time it takes for an eye to blink is 400 milliseconds. So that's the reason why I chose the name milliseconds, and also faster everything, faster cars, to denote the speed of the time we are in. So that's why milliseconds.
Wow.
Also, on a very deeper level, when we see things, and our consciousness comes in sets of 400 milliseconds. That's a very deep level. So yeah, it has a very,
wow,
very meaning.
You know, the world needs more of you. Because it's I think sometimes we just get so satisfied with the headlines, just the surface level headlines. And we don't ever really want to go deeper.
It's been almost 2 years with you as well, hosting Imagine a Place podcast. Why did you start? Why did you want to go into podcasting?
It started as one thing, but it evolved into something much more. So kind of you, I wanted to explore what I was fascinated in at a deeper level. And for me, it was place. I've always been interested in place and the impact that place has on you. I can even remember special places in my life. I can remember how they smell. And there is something about a place, some places you walk into and you just feel full, right?
Yeah.
And there's other places you walk into and they might be austere or empty, missing something. And so I've just always picked up on that. And I wanted an opportunity to really understand it better. But what I found is I became much less interested in place, although I still am, but I'm more interested in the people and the people that make up the industry of interior design and architecture. And there's some amazingly creative people, fantastic stories. That became what really drove my interest around Imagine a Place. And so, yes, it's about place and design and how it impacts us, but it's also about the people who do it every day.
How do you define a place? Like the environment we are in, or anything, a room, a park, a mall, everything is a place. How do you define it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the difference between space and place, like a space can be anything, but until it has meaning to something of life, person or otherwise, once a space has meaning, it becomes a place. And so, a big field might just be a space, but as soon as you take a photograph of you and, a loved one in that field and you hang on to that memory, that's now a place. That's kind of how I've processed it through my conversations and I think that's really what interior design and architecture is about. It's about taking space that the earth has given us and making places out of it. And they do that through design.
Yeah, you just mentioned taking photographs. I had a very similar question. Like, I've been thinking about it for a long time. Like, why do people capture pictures? Like, why do they not enjoy the moment they're in, the place they're in? And why do they want to capture the moment for the future when it does not matter that much because they can only see it, not relive it? Like, why do you think that? Like, it's a very different question, but...
Oh, yeah. Keshav, I would love to chat about that. Yeah. I mean, I talk about this, just in my personal life. Oh. I'm curious about the same thing. I heard a great quote. This was from a researcher. Oh, man, her name is going to slip me. Julia Friedman, and she said, people are more worried about the story they're going to tell than the moment they're living in. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, you really hit a nerve. And I do wonder, as photography becomes, as it becomes more accessible, easier, free, everywhere, does it become less special? Or does it become more special because it's more a part of our lives? I mean, now we're looking at photos all the time now, way more than we used to. But, it's kind of like supply and demand. The demand for photos has gone up. The supply has skyrocketed. I don't know. Is there a supply and demand problem there? Like to where photos just don't mean anything anymore? I'm trying to process the same thing.
Yeah. I think clicking pictures, like back in the good old days when there were no cameras and we couldn't capture pictures, people were happier, I think, because they were in a way not trying to relive that moment back again. They were fully present in the same moment. And also they were not comparing their stories with others, which as a way like clicking pictures does to us, like posting on Instagram, we want to click better pictures and not realizing that we want to live in the moment. Like we want to just compare. It should be better than him. It should be better than her. So yeah, I think.
Comparison. Yeah, that is a slippery slope to go down when you begin to compare yourself with other people. That's kind of a dangerous place to be because, I had a great interview recently that just talked about your personal journey and how life is about becoming the best version of yourself. And if you really embrace that idea, that never ends, right? That journey never ends. But the best version of yourself has nothing to do with anyone else but you. It can feel a little bit of a selfish journey. Now that I say that out loud, boy, I kind of want to go there now. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that really what life's about? I don't know. Maybe not. I think maybe it's helping others become the best versions of themselves. I don't know. A lot to think about. Do you always go this deep, Keshav? I mean, because some of your episodes, you're talking about, very pragmatic things related to how Google works and all that stuff. And it's like, maybe we're having this conversation because we have this interest together. I don't know.
Yeah, that's perfect. Like these are like synergies matching together. So I actually like this. You mentioned about comparison. So there's a very good book about it. I don't remember the title exactly. It's like 1,000 Miles, if I'm not wrong. And the book is based, it's a fictional book. So it's based on a person. So one day a person gets a call from a movie producer and the producer says that we want to make a film on your life. And now he looks back and realizes that his life is not that interesting. And there are no times that could be like captured perfectly in a movie. There are no funny incidents. There are no thriller things in his life. So he retrospects and after that, after realizing that there's going to be a movie made on his life, he like sets out on a journey like to other places, like to make his story interesting for himself, not for other people. So this was really, really cool. You should like read that book.
That's interesting. Yeah. I would love to read that book. 1,000 miles, huh?
Yeah, most likely. Yeah, Journey of 1,000 miles. Yeah.
Journey of 1,000 miles.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
Not the 100 foot journey, which is also a great book by Richard Moraes. Oh, well, I'll tell you what. If you love food, that's a good book.
I love it.
It's about is it okay if we go off topic here?
Yeah, perfectly.
Okay. It's about a young Indian boy who there you go, you. Okay. Young Indian boy whose parents' restaurant burns down. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they move to France, a small town in France, and he always had a passion for cooking. They open up an Indian restaurant, and across the street, 100 feet away, is a 4-star French restaurant. And the young boy ends up going to the French restaurant and bringing his flavors and knowledge and insights over there. In the beginning, it's kind of controversial. They end up learning from each other, and then this young boy goes on to be the top chef in the country of France. And it's a really amazing, like, personal journey to see this boy grow up and there's so much talk about food. Like, my mouth is literally watering right now as I'm telling you about this book.
You know, there's this movie by Disney, Ratatouille. I think you might have watched it. Yeah, yes. That's so perfect, man. So yeah, something on similar lines. So let's go back to the topic now. So like, when you were at Millikan University, you were the one chosen to give in the commencement speech at your university. So do you think that was the origin of your like interest in speaking to people and talking to people?
You know, I think more than that being the origin of that, I think it was more the outcome of that. So I think being interested in other people was something I learned at a young age. And I learned it through a book, a Dale Carnegie book, okay, called How to Win Friends and Influence People. The title's actually deceiving. It sounds very self-serving, but honestly, it's about sincerity. And that's one thing you can't fake is sincerity. You know, you can change the words you say. You can always pick different words, but you can't change how you feel when you say them. And how you feel when you say something is really what people are getting from you. And so I became sincerely interested in other people. And I think through that process, that created an opportunity to give that speech, which is really a moment to kind of capture not my journey, but it was a moment to speak in front of a class and represent all of our journey together, going through our 4 years together. And so that was a pretty special moment. And so I haven't reflected on that in a very long time, but I do think that this idea of sincerity, we don't spend enough of time on it. We often sometimes try to pick the right words to say rather than just focusing on how we're saying what we're saying, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really makes sense. Don't you like we both host podcasts and like we have interviewed many people. You certainly have interviewed a lot of people. Don't you think like it's too much knowledge and there should be a way to document it? Anything on that lines?
Yeah, I mean, you do gain a lot. It's almost like, and you're going through this right now, right? You have these conversations. Yeah. They help you grow. Where do you put all this information, right? You store it in your brain. And then it's not like it's always there, but there are certain moments where something pops out and you remember a quote that's changed you. And, you know, I've found that I just need to write it down. So even if I'm having a great conversation, if I don't want to lose a moment of that, going through my edits, writing down key quotes, they usually stay with me. If I were to just have these conversations and just move on and I didn't take the time to kind of document some of my favorite parts, I probably would forget them, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's good to like write down like 50, 100 words summaries of every episode. I think that's a good way to start this documentation journey. Yeah. You know, so you're saying something?
No, go for it.
Yeah. So I think imagine the place revolves around interior design and culture, most likely, and now people too included. Like, how do you think is the future of interior design with work from home increasing virtually and like more attention to virtual collaborations?
That's a great question. And I think one of the big changes is that place matters more to people now than it ever has before.
Yeah.
I think people used to look at their homes and their work often as different lives. And the reality is they shouldn't be that different, you know? I mean, if you will go into an office, right? Maybe it's one day a week, maybe it's 4 days a week, whatever it is. If you go somewhere and you're going to spend an entire day there, it should feel nurturing, you know? It should feel like it's helping you do your job better. You should feel comfortable, personally comfortable in the space, not just physically, but you should feel like you belong there. And I think places were somewhat attuned to that, but not to the degree they are now, where we realize as we all went home, you know, another thing we realized is that we're actually really good hackers. I mean, when we got sent home,
yeah,
you know, when I say we, when a lot of the population, because a lot of people were already working from home or didn't ever go home, but when a lot of us went home, we had to make it work, whether it was the kitchen table or a bed or whatever. We had to kind of hack together the environment that was good for us. And what I hope happens is when people start to go back into public environments and office spaces, I'm projecting and hoping that they become less precious. They don't become these places that aren't meant to be reconfigured. You know, we need places that encourage people to use these great hacking skills to build their own environments and build the right meeting space for the moment and build the right private space for the moment. And I know it's going to be impossible to ever create the real world version of Minecraft. You know, like that may not happen. But, you know, I do think there's going to be a level of hackability that we bring into the physical environment now.
I think when we talk about place, I usually say this thing that everyone is a designer in a way that he or she organizes his stuff around a place. Like, even if you're organizing your shelter table, that's also design in some sort of way. And looking like into the future, I think there could be two types of people in a broad category. So because there will be increasing virtual collaborations, so people will travel a lot. That's what I am like predicting. Like, they would not stay at one place for their whole life, which we usually do. Like, we are like certainly exposed to some places, but now it will like increase to a lot because there'll be constant traveling involved. So in that sense, places will certainly affect a lot of them. And also there could be one other type of category where like a person is like working from the same home. He likes to, like, he likes that place. He does not want to go out and explore. So like that way, like two sides of places, like the difference and the deepness. So yeah, that's what
I think. I'm really feeling that. And I love how you said that, you know, everybody has the opportunity to be a designer in that way with the place around them. Actually, I think that is something that design and place gives you that you may not even know you have, which is control. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you wake up, you start your day, you know, you don't ever really get to control. Sometimes you do, but your work calendar is oftentimes populated with meetings and invites and things that maybe you didn't even put there, right? But if you ever feel like you're losing control, one of the best ways to get it back is to control your space. And even as a young kid, you know, like when you're a kid and you wake up and sometimes you don't even pick the clothes you wear to school. You don't pick what your parents made you for breakfast. You don't pick who you sit next to in class. You have a life that's pretty much out of your control, but your room or your space or whatever it is that you might have Like, you have control over your environment. And once you start to realize that, it can be pretty powerful.
Yeah, I think it's more like thinking inside the box as compared to thinking outside the box. So, yeah, that's also totally interesting. Like, so how do you think, like, how important a role storytelling plays in designing places and, like, designing anything? What's your take on that?
In terms of, like, the role of the designer in place.
Yeah, how can storytelling influence a place a person is at, like, experiencing? Like, for example, one of the places that uses storytelling to a very great advantage is maybe museums. They are, like, places which have given a premium tagline because of that, because of the way they represent stories. Why can't people in corporate workspaces use the same thing and make it feel like they are in a zone where they, like, enjoy working rather than hate to go to work. So
you are capturing something really important. And I think one of the interesting disconnects that I see in storytelling and interior design is that we often want to tell the story of the brand inside the space.
Yeah.
But to me, the brand is not the culture. Those are two different things. So Amazon has a brand, and that's, you know, they're going to make sure that that brand gives a certain feeling every time you see that logo, right? Or hear that sound or whatever it is. But that doesn't mean that that's the culture. And I think we sometimes confuse that, where it's like, okay, well, you know, we're going to put green and black on everything because that's our brand. And everybody's going to come here and they're going to feel awesome about Amazon, you know, or whatever it is, right? I don't think that that's the objective. The culture is all about the people. And I do think that's an epiphany we're going through now, is that, you know, culture is not brand, culture is people. And so how do we create spaces that are catering to the people and tell a story of the people in it? Now, here comes the next part of that. People are like, I mean, if I asked you to describe a normal person, you couldn't do it. We're all so different, you know? I mean, there's no such thing as a normal person. So because we're all so different, to me, space needs to reflect those differences. So when I think about storytelling in space, it's not about telling one person's story or the story of a brand. You might be able to exude values, like maybe like honesty, through the use of like natural raw materials or things like that, right? There's themes that you can bring in. But I do think you need spaces that are more eclectic in nature, spaces that are relaxing in some ways. And you need spaces that maybe are activating in other ways, because different people are going to crave those different spaces, especially at different times throughout the day. So I definitely think that there is pressure on designers to tell not just the story of a brand, or not just the story of the general population, but to find ways to make everybody feel like they belong.
Yeah. So when talking about spaces and one thing which intrigued me is that, so you mentioned a thing like story of the brand inside the space. For example, let's take example of Amazon. First of all, I love Amazon. I'm not like saying it in that regard.
I do too.
So what I'm saying is that, for example, let's take Amazon headquarters, and anyone who like walks into them, he'll be saying Amazon written big in big taglines there. But like anyone who is walking in that office, he knows that this is Amazon. I don't think there is a point to like put Amazon all over there and like that brand colors. You should design the space according to the people, like, according to how they want it, not like according to the brand. Because the brand exists outside that headquarters, not inside it. Inside is the people who are building it. So that's what I think of. Like, what's your opinion on this?
I agree. I think the building should not be a tribute to the brand or the company. The building should be a tribute to the people in it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know that colors have psychological impacts on us. Like, you know, as designers, we need to understand what those are, and we need to use those colors strategically. So that's just one example. Textures, the levels of intimacy you might find in a place, how we deal with acoustics, all these things, very human-centered thinking. And I think it's okay to celebrate the ideals of a company as long as the core focus is around the person. But it is kind of funny when you say it's like, we all know where we're going, you know?
Yeah.
You know? Hey, it doesn't need to be on every coffee mug and everything in the space.
Yeah. It kind of frustrates the people that, to a point, if like it's on everything that you see, like everywhere you go, Amazon, 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 Amazon. But yeah, you know that you're working there, so it does not make sense to me. So
maybe we'll all be working for Amazon one day.
That could be true. If Jeff, if you're listening, please, please hire us. We would like to work for you. As you mentioned acoustics right now, so I'm like very interested in sound editing as well, like mixing audio. And your podcast is the only one which I could find, which has a very like chill kind of vibe and very relaxing, soothing. Like if a person, like a person in this digital age, work from age, needs that kind of thing. Look, was it intentional from the starting? Because when you started with like peak COVID times, people were like very scared at that moment. Like, so was that intentional,
you know,
that vibe?
I would say the vibe of the podcast, especially musically and sound editing and things like that, was really a reflection of probably my own personal tone, because I would be the thing that would stay with that podcast through each interview. And so there's some guests I have that are, you know, very high strung, and they're very loud and interesting. And I just, no matter how hard I try, I can't get there, you know?
But I
have a chill vibe. And I think it's probably more of a reflection of myself. And was I always this way? Shoot, probably. I think I've always kind of been this way, and things in my life, probably the way I was raised, different things, probably all played a role in how I ended up.
I don't know, with me, it's like I have a different personality on the show than outside the show. It's just the way it is. I don't talk.
You
to
do?
People like, yeah, it's, I don't know why it is. I'm not trying intentionally. It's just what's naturally coming to me, but it is like, to a degree, it's true. So
like, tell me, like, all right, so on the show, you're also a very chill kind of vibe, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, but like more chill outside, not like that kind of like, with whenever my friends and like whenever like talking to people outside the show, I am a bit like more funny, chill, relaxed. I think it's the same. I think I was just overthinking stuff.
So what are you like, what is your go-to thing that you do to get to a place of zen? Like, what do you do to really relax?
I write. That would be my go-to thing. Yeah. And like, to get into the zone of writing, I play a song usually. And what I do is that, like, when I have to go to zen, like focus on that one thing, like distract myself, I listen to the song very carefully. I take a word from it, and that word like spans into an entire essay. That's what I write about. So like, that's like very chill kind of thing for me. Like, I want to relax it that way. Like, yeah.
So you're a word guy.
Yeah, kind of. I'm like,
okay.
What's your go-to zen thing?
My go-to zen thing, I kind of feel like I'm there a lot. I know this sounds weird, but like, I rarely find myself like needing to get to peace, you know?
That's a big thing to say.
Have more of like of an opposite kind of thing, where like sometimes I need, you know, I want to be motivated to work out, you know what I mean? Or I want to kind of live, you know, I want to work really hard at something, whatever it might be. So I'll use music to kind of change my spirit, right? So music is kind of my thing to change my spirit. Now, I have like artists I love. So I love Jack Johnson, and he might be like my Zen music go-to. So for me, I would say music is probably my most efficient way to change my mood, you know, to like move me from like Zen to like intense, or to move me from intense back down to zen, right? Music is how I get there.
That's the same. Do you like a hypothetical question? Like, do you feel good about that one thing can influence your mood, like music? Do you feel good about it, or do you want to detach itself from you?
Like, do I feel too susceptible?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's a great question. Do I feel good? I mean, I feel like, yeah, I feel okay with that. I feel okay with that. That's a great question. Like, am I out of control?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Something like
that. No, I've never been concerned about, but now maybe I will be. now I might be like, oh shoot.
Shouldn't have asked that.
I need to have bigger control over the way I feel. No, I feel good. I feel fine with it.
Like let's go on a tangent from here. So as a podcaster, like, how do you think one can grow himself? Because we're talking to different people on the show. It's after a point it gets difficult to frame new questions for everybody, and you can't ask the same questions to everyone. Like, what's the process? What do you do?
This is an interesting question, and I have an answer that I've thought a lot about this. I will prepare for a podcast. I'll do some research and I'll understand the person somewhat. I may develop a few questions. I rarely have more than three.
Okay.
And those questions might be more topics than specific questions. And the way I prepare is two ways. Is that first, I know this sounds weird, but I try to almost fall in love with the person that I'm about to interview. Even though I may not have met them or I may not know them, I'll listen to them, I'll find a YouTube video, I'll see them on LinkedIn, and I'll look at them, I'll read their profile, and then, again, it goes back to, I don't have to worry then about picking the right words, because as long as I am sincerely interested in this person, that sincerity will come out, and that will win over any question I might say, and then the next thing I'll do is I'll imagine the conversation. So sometimes I'll even do that for 20 minutes. I'll literally, in my head, be having the conversation a day in advance of when I'll actually have it. And I'll imagine the kinds of questions I'll ask, and I'll imagine how they'll answer. And then the next question I'll ask. And does it ever go that way? It never goes that way. It never goes the way I imagine it. But it also just helps me put myself in that moment. And then when I'm there, it feels familiar. It feels like I'm with somebody that I already know and love. And then that all that good energy comes out in the conversation. And then it's all about being in the moment, you know, not, you know, trying to have this agenda like we had talked about. It's about just really being curious about this person. And I try to hear cues. I try to understand if maybe they're struggling to put something into words, or maybe they want to talk about something and they're just afraid to ask. And I'm trying to pick up on that and draw that out of them. So it becomes much more about reading a person than it does about having a list of questions to come up with.
Does it get tired, like, researching so much about a person? Has it ever happened? Like, because I think it will take a lot of time when you're like listening to their podcast, seeing their videos, reading. Has it ever happened to you? Like, you like say that this is not my cup of tea. Like, this is getting too tiring.
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
I'm 75 episodes in. Could it happen? It might. That day might come, you know. And when it does, you know, maybe that's when Jeff Bezos will hire me. Who knows? I'll do something totally different.
For sure. Like, do you have any end goal for the podcast? Like, do you want to expand it to other areas, or like keep it in the same zone, like get more deep in that?
That's a great question. What I would love to do is add more forms of entertainment to the podcast. So I feel like the structure right now, the interviews are great. I think the quality of the production and the sound quality and the music integration and all that makes the episodes interesting, enjoyable. But I would love to explore other stories we can tell. And it's going to require probably a bigger budget and a lot more work and probably like a staff. And I don't know if I'll get there or not, but that would be something I'd hope for. How about you?
Yeah. So what my vision is that as I'm doing it all alone as of now, so I want to expand it to like startups and business, that kind of thing. But not right now, like after 100 episodes or 200 episodes. That's what I'll be doing. Like, I have not thought of it about a lot because I've just started it. So 15 episodes, 16 episodes that have been recorded. But yeah, it's very interesting, like the growth of a podcaster, because to like ask better questions, you have to be well informed. You like read a lot of books, watch a lot of documentaries. So that loop, like that helps you a lot in two ways. Like it helps you a lot develop intellectually, and also the podcast, it helps the podcast grow. Because, you know, with us like design podcast, our audience is very smart, and it's very difficult to keep that smart audience entertained all the time. So
great point.
Yeah. So we have to like do a bit of work on ourselves then. So yeah, that's what I have thought of.
That's a fantastic point. You know, it's almost like you have to, that is a hard thing to keep up with. Keeping a very intelligent audience entertained. I've never kind of thought of it like that. I've kind of always thought of it like, well, if it's entertaining enough for me, it must be entertaining enough for others. But maybe that's not going to stay true forever.
Yeah, that's true. You know, people are usually saying these days that attention spans are reducing a lot these days. Like it's down to very, very low numbers. And on the other side, people are still watching Netflix shows, which are like very, very long, 1 hour long episodes. Why? Because they found entertainment, and also there's this fear of missing out. Like my friend has watched Stranger Things. I also want to watch Stranger Things. So I think that also is a very interesting thought. Like, why do people not spend this time on educational things? Because they're not entertaining enough. So
yeah. Oof. Yeah. I can tell you the that mindset, oh man, it is changing our brains.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got like this quadrant, okay? So you've got urgency and importance. And you've got urgency on the you know, going up and down, importance going left to right, right? In the upper right-hand corner, you have the things that are really urgent and really important. We're always going to do those first.
That's true.
And then you get to choose whether you do the urgent, non-important stuff or you do the things that are really important but not urgent. And to your point about Netflix and being entertained, we have so much access to urgent and not important things that we're not spending enough time. You know, education is one of those things that it's not urgent that you learn another language or whatever, right? But it's important, right, to continue to grow. And it's like we're letting go of that bottom right-hand corner of that grid of urgency and importance. Perfect. And I feel that. I feel that happening in people. I feel that happening sometimes in myself. And I also think that we're replacing the conversations that we normally would have with ourselves with entertainment. Like, entertainment is so easy to come by now that, you know, normally maybe you would have been bored and you would have thought, okay, well, did I say that right? Or maybe I should have said that a little differently. Or, you know, you would critique yourself or think about your day, man, you can waste, you know, every second on the phone or watching shows or whatever. Like, you don't have to self-reflect anymore. And I do think that's something that we have to be much more intentional about now.
You know, you mentioned Netflix. Like, Netflix is very, very good at that illusion of urgency. And, you know, there's a very deep reason behind it. Like, I'll tell you. Mm. So, you know, Netflix uses primarily three colors: red, black, and brown. These are the three colors on the website. And, you know, whenever you go to a theater, the seats are red colored, the theater is black, and the acoustics on the right side are brown colored. So it gives you a sense. Yeah, that's true. So it gives you a sense that you're already in a theater and you're watching it. And so that's the reason why it's very good at faking that illusion of urgency, which people don't realize. And I think only Netflix does that, not any other OTT platform. So yeah, it's
That is wild.
Yeah.
That is mind blowing. I mean, that's totally a milliseconds moment right there.
This is a great plug for the show.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, very, very intriguing when I read that. So, yeah, I was like, I was thinking, why did Amazon didn't do this? Why did Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Hotstar, why didn't they do this? So, yeah, very intriguing.
It is very intriguing. Yeah, I love that it does create this illusion of urgency of all the cliffhangers between episodes and everything. It's like, yeah. Oh,
amazing.
Very interesting. Yeah.
The role plays in your life. Like, so what's one piece of advice that you would like to give to designers or young podcasters that are listening to this conversation?
Well, that's a great question. I feel like we've touched on a few things that I love to talk about. You know, one of the topics that I'm passionate about in design is creativity. And let's go there for a little bit. Let's talk about creativity, because I have a lot of advice around creativity that came through my own self-exploration. Okay, so if I'm allowed to walk through this here, we'll start with a children's book. Okay, so there's a children's book I wrote called The Frocks, and I want to talk about how I got there. Every night before bed, my kids would ask for a story. And so I'd sit on the end of the bed and I would try to come up with a story. And I found it was very difficult because, you know, it's late at night and you're tired, but they're like, oh, come up with something. Come up. So I would make up a random story. And over time, what I started doing was at the end of the night, I knew I had to come up with a story. So I would find a moment during the day that was an interesting moment, and I would hold on to that moment, and I would say, okay, well, what if I could make that a little more magical? So if I'd see fireflies out in the yard, I'd say, okay, like, what about fireflies? Could I make interesting? I saw a sock with a hole in it, and I was like, well, how did that hole get there? Okay, so just through telling these stories inspired me to wonder a little bit more. I don't think we wonder enough, and that wondering led to creativity. Okay, so what I found was that creativity doesn't have to be like this spark, this amazing moment, you know, or this time the light bulb goes off. It can be kind of woven into every day, and you can find ways to bring creativity into your day. And then the second thing of why I think I was creative sitting in the bed with my kids was because of the setting I was in. So if you took my kid's bedroom and you looked at it, you know, there's color everywhere. It's kind of messy, you know. And if I took that and I put that setting next to a picture of a boardroom at, you know, headquarters of XYZ company.
Yeah, Amazon.
They would look, Amazon. We'll just say Amazon because we just love talking about Amazon.
Yeah.
They would look totally different, right? One is a setting that's very, I don't know, boring. Let's just call it what it is. Boring, maybe full of judgment. And another setting is very, you know, inclusive and creative and colorful. And I think judgment is the absolute antithesis of creativity. So if I think about playing, you know, in the corporate world, whether you're at Amazon or wherever, you're motivated to play it safe. Like you don't want to take a risk. But the reality is, like, playing it safe when you're telling a story to your kids has no advantage. They don't want you to play it safe, right? Yeah. Be crazy, think outside the box. But if you do that in the workplace, you're afraid. And you're afraid because you feel judgment. You feel judgment from the people around you. The space just oozes with judgment in many cases. And it's like, how do we create environments that are judgment-free? Because that is what will, I think, inspire the greatest amount of creativity. If you're not afraid to share that crazy idea, because here's the thing, I mean, maybe your idea is crazy, but if you share that idea, it's going to remind someone else of another idea. And then they'll share that one. And then eventually you'll land on a good one that makes sense, but you'd never get there unless you actually let that crazy idea out of your box. And so that is something that I'm, advice I could give is, if you're in a position to influence people at work and the culture and the mood, anything you could do to strip judgment out of it will pay back in creativity tenfold.
Something on the lines of that was really, really good. I think something on the lines of judgment, which I also learned, is like that our center of importance lies outside of us. And that's the reason why we're always seeking validation from other people and like afraid of judgment. So yeah, that's also a very interesting idea. Everyone wants to be validated.
You're like 20 something years old, right?
No, I'm 19.
You're 19? Oh my God. How did you do this? How did you get so dang wise?
I like to read books. So I think it's just borrowed knowledge. It's not like I've gained over experience. Like I'm just borrowing other people's lives. So it's kind of something like that. Also, you mentioned creativity. Yeah, you can go ahead. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about borrowing. I mean,
yeah.
Do we own anything? Are we just borrowing everything? I mean, it all belongs to the planet, right? Is anything really truly ours? Or are we just borrowing it for
a handful of years? I think we're always in debt. We're always in debt. And then after we die, now we are free of debt. Like everything if we own is gone. And like, I think that's kind of one way of thinking about it. So this is going really deep, man. to sum it up, like to creativity in two words, I think creativity is just caffeinated curiosity. That's what I think.
I love that. Caffeinated curiosity. Ooh, man, I hope that's the title of this episode.
Sure. I'll put that title if you want it.
I love it. I'm writing that one down.
Sure.
Oh,
man. This has been a really great conversation, man. Now, I'll be asking you rapid-fire questions, okay? So,
yeah.
nine questions, and I have to answer each question in 10 seconds, okay?
Okay.
Your favorite design podcast?
Oh, Nice Try.
Oh, that's the name?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's the name.
I just got confused.
You're like, wait a minute.
What has been your all-time favorite episode of Imagine the Place podcast?
Oh, gosh, that's so hard. One that hasn't yet launched.
That would have been very fascinating, man. Like, something that's coming in the future. So, what's your hobby?
Hobby?
Yeah, anything.
Coaching.
Oh, that's really amazing. Yep. What's your end goal in life?
End goal in life? Feel like I've helped others.
You've helped me a lot. You can be sure of that. Favorite fictional character?
Oh. Oh, man. Okay. There's a movie, or there's a series called Fringe, and there's an actress called Olivia Dunham, and I think she's just awesome. And that's probably because I'm watching that show right now.
Okay. I'll link it in the description below.
All right.
Favorite quote from a movie?
Favorite quote from a movie? Okay. There's a movie called The Beach.
Okay.
Okay. And there's a strange quote in the beginning. It says, never refuse an invitation, never outstay your welcome, and if it hurts, it's probably worth it.
Damn, that is so, so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
We should have started with this quote.
Isn't that a good quote?
Amazing. I'll print it out. The last book you read.
The last book I read was Build Boldly. And it was written by Bola Williams. And Bola was somebody I had on the podcast. I haven't launched her episode yet, but that's why I read her book. She launched a book, and I interviewed her. So
that's amazing.
Let me actually think of a different book, because you know, I'm not sure that I would have selected hers had I not been interviewing her. But that is, you know what? That is truly, I mean, that's truly the last book I read. So let's just go with that. We'll go with it.
Sorry. Explain what is design to you in 3 words.
Design is caring for others.
That's so apt, man. Amazing. The best project or person you've ever worked with in your whole life?
Oh, the best person I've ever worked with in my whole life?
Or a project.
All right. I'm going to go with my wife.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, I hate to call life a project, but, you know, she's my partner, man. She's my partner. And the stuff I'm doing there matters way more than the stuff I'm doing, you know.
That's really true. I think life is a very, very big jigsaw puzzle. And it's like really good that you found the right piece, your wife. So yeah.
Ooh, I like that. That's good. That's good.
It was really, really great talking to you, Doug. I really enjoyed it. Honored to have you on the show, man.
you're amazing at 19. I mean, you are just, you're something else. And I'm super excited to know you and to kind of follow along.
Thanks a lot for being on the show. Really means a lot. Bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Hey, thanks a lot for sticking till the end. Hope you had an amazing time. You can find the links to the Imagine the Place podcast and Doug's social handles in the description below. And if you enjoyed this episode, do give us a rating and subscribe on Spotify or wherever you listen. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram @milliseconds_HQ for more updates. For any questions or feedback regarding the podcast, you can email me @milliseconds_HQ@gmail.com. Stay tuned. Cheers.